Welcome to the live stream. Dan and I were in a heated debate before this, and we were yelling at each other, as you can see. So, and I told Dan, shut up, we gotta go live.
And
No,
I
that's
can't, I
not
don't know
true.
why it's like our videos, it seems like it'll be blurry and then it's not blurry, then it's blurry. I don't
Oh,
know.
you look fine now.
I just got my hair cut. That's why I look so good.
Yeah, that's what it is. You need to let me cut your hair at some point.
You lost on the bet about me shaving. Oh well.
I think I can still work in that angle at some point. Oh, well, welcome everyone who is here. I
People.
am gonna pull up the chat really quickly so we can do a couple shout outs. What we're gonna do over the next hour, here with me, this, by the way, this is Dan Frio. Dan has a YouTube channel called therateupdate.com. We work on the same team. I'm actually under Dan's. Dan's my boss. So we work on the same team, and we work on a team with a couple handful of loan officers who can originate in all 50 states. So we'd be happy to help if you'd like. Let's see who's in here. That guy Rye, of
That guy Ray,
course,
woo, arrived.
of course, consistently always in. I love it. Who else? ASLS2884, welcome. We're gonna get to questions here in just a second. Zachary Liu, Antoine Reed, who else? Janet, good to see you. El Loco Diablo, Siobhan Morgan, Trisha 11, Henry, good to see all of you. So what we're gonna do over the next hour, I always say hour, but it ends up being like two. Maybe we'll try to tighten that up a little bit today. We're just gonna answer your questions. So if you have home buying questions, ask them. And we'd love to help. And that's about it. I don't really have anything else in here. Do you have
Here,
anything at the top you want to?
I'll just start. Well, there was some good news on the economy today for those that are from my channel. I used to do the rate update every day and let you guys know what's going on with rates and all this other things. So if you guys don't know, rates are considerably down to from where they were in November. November, we peaked out at about 7.375. I can almost bet that tomorrow we're going to be back in the fives. Yes, believe it or not, back in the fives. So if anybody was out there and they you refinanced or you bought your house already, I talked to several people today. I talked to one borrower that's looking to buy a Kyle looking to buy a rental property, and she just closed in December at 7.125 with 1 point on a VA loan. Today we could
Ooh,
do
VA,
5.9. Today we could get
multifamily.
5.99 with no points. So we could kill what she was getting offered, but that's not why we're here. We're here to answer the questions that you guys have. But on the economic front, inflation is starting to really come down, and that's what's causing interest rates to come back down in line, getting back to kind of some normal levels. So we're going to start seeing mortgage rates ease a little bit more. Federal Reserve is expected to raise rates one more time, a quarter percent. What happened today was we had inflation numbers that are really starting to show inflation cooling down, especially on the manufacturing front. So that's that part of it.
Now, I do want to ask you a question really quickly, because I feel like what happens a lot is sometimes you hear like the Fed's going to raise rates, and then people think, oh no, like mortgage rates are increasing again, and it kind of causes this bad news cycle. Can you explain what the Fed rate is, how it impacts mortgage rates, and how inflation's in the mix as well? Just so when we hear like interest rates increasing or the rates increasing from the Fed, it's not like the end of the world.
Okay, in its simplest terms, here's what it is. The Federal Reserve was created, and they have two mandates, basically two reasons why they were created. One was full employment to help the economy stay at full employment, and the other one was price stability, aka inflation. Well, they've done a pretty dismal job on the inflation front over the past couple of years, but that's starting to come back down in line right now. So what the Federal Reserve controls is basically called the federal funds rate. It has nothing to do with mortgages, absolutely nothing to do with mortgages. Neither does the treasury bills. So some people watch the treasury bonds and they'll say, well, the 10-year treasury is up today. That means mortgage rates are up today. No, it doesn't. Mortgage rates are factored in by an element or a bond that trades on Wall Street that's called a mortgage-backed security. So what happens is what you're seeing right now is the Federal Reserve is raising rates to kind of curtail inflation. So they're raising the federal funds rate. What happens almost instantaneously when the Federal Reserve raises rates is your credit card and your car interest rates are going to change. They change kind of in accordance to what the Federal Reserve is doing. Mortgage rates are tied to a bond that trades on Wall Street that's called a mortgage-backed security. So we've seen there is some usually some correlation between the mortgage bond and normal corporate or treasury bills, but there doesn't have to be. So when on my channel every day that I used to go over, and I do it basically once a week right now, is I explain to you, you know, what the MBS market is doing, the mortgage-backed security bond market's doing, and the whys behind it. Why is it going up and down? What we've seen over the past year is the fear of higher and higher and higher inflation in the horizon, knowing that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to raise rates. That's one thing. Another thing that happened is over the pandemic and for the past few years, the Federal Reserve has stepped in and they've been buying mortgage-backed securities on Wall Street, artificially driving down the prices, or I'm sorry, up the prices and the yields down. So how bonds work is basically, you know, you buy a bond today. Here's a good example. Let's say you buy a bond today and you paid, you know, the maturity of the bond for a year from now is $100. So I give you $100 today, and a year from now, you give me $100 back, and I bought the mortgage-backed security bond. What is my yield on that? Well, it's zero, okay? It's zero because I give you $100, and I get $100 back. Well, let's say if the price, let me just show you how this works. If the price goes down, how the rates go up, okay? So let's say for that bond now, I give you $50 today, and next year I get my $100 back. Well, the yield on that rate is 100%. You doubled your money. So do you see how when the rate or the price goes down, yields go up? So what I monitor on a daily basis is what the mortgage-backed security market is doing. So if it's going up or down, I know rates are going up. But today's news and a lot of the economic news that we monitor, especially I monitor a lot, is I kind of been predicting a lot of these things that are happening. And now we're starting to see the actually bond prices going up. For, you know, there's more and more people looking to buy bonds because the whole world, you have to think about it, the whole world can buy our bonds, and a lot of parts of the world right now are in really dismal situations. So they're buying our bonds, thus increasing the price and driving down the yields.
That's Would you believe I have a calculator for this?
That's the boring explanation of, you know, how all this stuff works. So if you want to check out that content, you know, check out my channel. But most people check out Kyle's channel because he's a handsome looking fella. And
I hope that's not the only reason.
He actually goes through, everybody rants and raves. They're like, oh my God, his videos are so fantastic because he explains in great detail these products. Well, that's what he does. On my side, I'm more on the economic side. I'm trying to let you guys know, you know, where mortgage rates are going, what the economic news is coming out that might, you know, play havoc on mortgage rates again, or we might continue to see mortgage rates come down.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dan's channel is linked in the title. Let me double check that that's true. Yep. Yep, so you're able to click on that right there. Dan, can you see my screen? Or can you see like the Excel doc
on
the screen?
The bond price? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I actually, just to illustrate what you're talking about, because those bonds are, an easy way to think about it is that they're issued as $100 face value, and then they have a return to them, right? So let's say it's $100 and they return, what do you think would be a fair return on this? Maybe like 4.5? 3?
Yeah. Yeah, put 4.5, just
an example.
Yeah.
So to your point of what you're saying, what ends up happening is, let's say the price goes up to, extreme example, 120. It starts trading at that because there gets more demand. In the same way where like there's more demand for home prices and the home prices increase, if there's more demand for those bonds by pricing, the price increases as well. So I just actually looked up an article about the Fed over, you know, the time period of COVID when they were doing what you're talking about, purchasing these bonds. Or mortgage-backed securities, $1 trillion. You probably can't. $1 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities going out and increasing the price of mortgage-backed securities when they're traded. And what that ends up doing goes from 4.5 to, let's say, you know, 3.75. So the yield actually comes down on that because the price is higher. And it's just a very simple equation. We just take, you know, the actual price, the rate, divided by the new price times 100, and that's what the new yield would be. So this is just illustrating what Dan was talking about.
And that's perfect. So that's why we've seen the Fed raise rates. Well, we saw mortgage rates skyrocket or go last year from 3 to 7. But now we're down, like I said, we were at 7.375 in November. We're probably going to be about 5.99 tomorrow open. It's a substantial drop in rates.
Okay, I've actually never asked you this. What's your opinion on? So obviously we went from quantitative easing, where you know the Fed is like purchasing billions of dollars a month. I think it was around
40 billion.
$40 billion a month.
Think of that, billion.
Yeah. So that's obviously lowering interest rates, which is why you know we were at that kind of like high twos, low 3% interest rate market. And right now, what the Fed has been doing is they've been allowing things to naturally fall off the balance sheet. So the bonds that they had in there, just like a mortgage, you know, expires after 30 years, you pay it off. The same thing is happening inside of those bonds as well. So they're getting paid off and they're coming off of the balance sheet. What is your opinion on if the Fed switches to quantitative tightening?
They are. They are starting to sell. So that was the huge hiccup about Q3, Q4 of last year. They started selling. And so what that means is, so here's what happened. And I know a lot of you guys might not care about the economics, but we're on the topic. Is they artificially were going in buying up $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities. So think of that. They're driving up the price. Okay, because they keep bidding and bidding, and they're bidding against other people. You actually, you know, people might have some of these bonds in their 401k program. So I don't know. So they were artificially buying and buying and buying these like crazy, driving up the prices and artificially lowering the rates. So now what they did is they stopped buying for a while. Now they're starting to sell some of those bonds back in the market. And so we have, like today I got an illiquidity alert saying there's too many bonds in the market, and we saw a kind of a hiccup in the bond market today. But that's what's happening. So that's one piece of the puzzle. When I talk to a lot of analysts, I'm like, so what's your take on quantitative tightening? And a lot of people are like, you know what? I didn't even think of that. Well, I've been thinking about that because I'm thinking, well, the normal rate right now should be about 5.5%. We were still teetering in the 6.5% ranges. Because I think there's not a lot of people buying mortgage-backed securities right now, and that now you have the Federal Reserve flooding the market with more and more of them, so the prices are declining because there's way too many bonds in the market, and thus what happens when they decline, mortgage rates go up. So there's going to be a washout phase, and that's where I'm having a tough time predicting where we're going to be in rates for the next year, because they've had. Like you said, they have $1 trillion in bonds. They got to get rid of it at some point. And you can't just dump them in the market because there's not enough investors buying those bonds. So that's going to be a trick. And they're actually managing this pretty darn well, to believe it or not. Hmm. But yeah, my expectations were rates would be about 5.5 this year and kind of stay steady at that. And that's where I'm still expecting us to be in that range.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's hop into some questions here.
Not economics.
As much as I love economics, I did so bad in economics in college. It's rough.
See, that's what my degree's in.
Oof, man.
But,
you definitely are qualified.
All right. What do we got?
All right. ASLS2884. You know, you emailed me and told me your username. You said it looks like something, and I can't remember what you said. Remind me on what it looks like. Okay, I owe about 17 more payments on my car loan. Should I pay it down so the total due will equal less than 10 payments and not be considered in my DTI for FHA? Quick answer, unfortunately, they don't allow you to game the system that way. It does have to be down to its amortized 10 payments left. You can't pay it down to the 10 payment mark to have that counted off. I wish, that would be very nice.
Let's just throw something out there too. If you're leasing a car, you can't really prepay that lease and not include it in your debt ratio, because the expectations are, well, the lease is up. Now you got to turn in the car and get another car. So you're going to either have another lease payment or car payment. So there is different answers. It depends on if you own it or if you're leasing the car.
Awesome. Lisa, you said the sound is off here. Look, I fixed my, look, it says the stream is healthy. So I think we're good. It may be on your end, but let me know if that's still acting up.
I'll try to move my screen a little bit closer to
El LA. Loco Diablo, how is self-employment income calculated and assessed for FHA, conventional loans? How far back does one need to provide their income history for self-traditional employment for those types of loans? Dan is our resident self-employment income expert. Self-proclaimed.
Okay, so there is differences between FHA and conventional, maybe. So what's normally analyzed is your last 2 years of your taxes. What you need to do is go to your Schedule C on your taxes. We don't want to know what's all the way at the top, your gross sales. We want to know what the bottom is for your net income. But how it's worked is FHA will require 2 years of full tax returns. And if you're a corporation, we need the corporate returns and your personal returns. However, if you've been in business for 5 years or more, a lot of times we'll get it when we run Freddie Mac. Now, we can explain that in another video, maybe. A lot of times, Freddie Mac, who does a lot of approvals for conventional financing, will only ask for 1 year of taxes. And again, if you're in business over 5 years, okay? So it doesn't mean for sure it's going to be 1 year of taxes, but the stronger your credit and everything else, most likely it's only going to ask for 1 year of your tax returns. And how they get analyzed is we basically just take your net profit. You can add back any depreciation or depletion. Divide that by 12, and that's your income.
Yep. Siobhan, you asked what's going on with interest rates right now. We just covered that. So I have the rewind feature on the lives on, so you can just scroll back if you want to take a look there. Henry, welcome. DeLaw, hello, Henry. 2. Hello from Atlanta. I have a USD loan with a great interest rate, but no one can beat the rate, and lenders just seem to push away. So you already have a USDA loan, but when you say beat the rate, do you mean for like a refinance? Because if you already have one, I'm not sure what.
Keep it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a USDA loan.
If you can clarify.
I'm trying to read word by word by two. And if you go to hello from Atlanta, I have a USDA loan, great interest rate. So if you're shopping around, actually Kyle has a link that you can go to, and you can actually download your quote and we'll check it for you. And I'm usually the one that gets those. I'll do a quick video. I'll run an analysis of it and send you a video back on, you know, what we can do for you. Most of the time, like today I had somebody that they got pre-approved. They were at 6.625 on a, I think it was a VA loan, 6.625 plus 1 point. We were at 5.99 with no points. So that point was a $700,000 loan. So we were saving the client $9,000 in fees and got him a rate. I think the rate was like 0.625 or a little bit more than that, more or less than what they had the quote. So yeah. Kyle has a link that you can just download your loan estimate in there. We'll review it and get right back to you.
Yeah.
But sometimes if it sounds too good to be true, it's too good to be true.
Yeah. And that, we just started tracking some of the different like savings differences here because I put them through a mortgage calculator that I built. That one that Dan just mentioned, that was like $47,815 over 10 years in savings through interest just on and upfront fees on that loan. So I will say lenders pushing away USDA is a really unfortunate thing. I love USDA loans. A little bit partially because like I live in an area where like USDA is more common, and I was always used to a lot of loan officers around here don't like they don't do USDA. I think people just get confused, or I don't know.
It's a form.
So I was like, I'm gonna become great at USDA loans. I love them. I think they're fantastic.
They are so good.
It's a bummer.
No money down.
Yeah. So it's a bummer that a lot of like companies don't want to do them. I think it's absurd. We do them in all 50 states, so we're happy to help. Yep. Just right up here. I wish I could bring my finger over to Dan's side.
Go ahead, do it
we
now.
We need to do like, if we both are on green screens, we can like cross. Do it now. We can like
do it now. Look, it might look. If you point up there,
oh,
now.
Oh shoot! This is like so hard. Wait.
Wait. Right there. His wrist is broken.
Oh, we're close. Trisha,
sorry, man, I screw up all your videos because you're usually nice, calm, and collect, and I come in here and mess them all up.
No,
you got to add some humor.
Yeah, I think it's good. Sometimes I can be a little too dry, too business. Trisha, welcome. Thank you for being here, Anthony. Shed Martinez, I've seen you a couple times. Thanks for being here and asking your question. You said once a 203K closes, Can you move things in before all the work is done?
Yes. The 203K basically is you're going to get draws during a certain time frame to use to fix the house. So for example, let's say you were putting in new kitchen appliances and countertops and cabinets, and that was just one of the projects. You're moved in, everything's going good. What'll happen is you finish all that stuff, you call the lender, they'll have an inspector come out saying, yep, everything looks good, and then they'll release those funds. But absolutely, you can move in. Because many times a 203K loan, one of the ones is basically you're doing TLC. Other ones, you are doing structural things. But as long as you can live there and you have an occupancy permit and it's livable, yeah, you're, by all means, you can live there.
Yep. Yeah, and like Dan mentioned too, if you don't have a certificate of occupancy on that, you obviously can't live in there yet. But you will need that to live there, but you can move stuff in. Siobhan Morgan, what is the minimum credit score for a good mortgage rate? So this question gets asked a lot, and it's kind of hard to answer because mortgage rates are all based off of a credit score scale. So it really is, the better your credit score, the lower the interest rate is. The lower your credit score, the higher the interest rate is. And it's all bracketed based on different credit scores that you have. And I can show you a quick example here. Let's see, Fannie Mae LLPAs. This will help illustrate this a little bit. So as we look in here, this shows different rate differences based on your credit score. And so all of this is kind of the back end that lenders use to see what kind of interest rate you're going to get. So for instance, the chart tops out at 640. And this is on a conventional loan. It's different on FHA and VA and USDA, but it tops out at 640. So when you say a good rate, well, you can get, you know, good is kind of relative to your credit score. So anything above 740, if you have an 800, unfortunately you don't get bonus points. Maybe we'll get you a sticker if that helps, but above 740, you can't get a lower rate than that. Then we have 720 to 739, then it goes to 700, 680, 660, 640, 620 is the minimum for conventional. So that's how it all is going to work in between there.
It's really confusing on how all that works. If we could actually share, we should share a rate sheet one day so everybody can see how many pages there are and how many adjustments can be actually factored in. It's nuts. Thank God it's all automated right now. And last week, if you guys want to check out last week's video, we actually showed you behind the scenes on what we do. It's a system we use. We plug in all your information and it scans the whole country, letting us know what other banks we're set up with that we can use their products and rates. And it allows us to basically do your shopping for you.
Yep.
But that's the rate. If you ever saw a rate sheet, it's very, very confusing.
Allie 2.0 said, this is a related, does income affect interest rate? In a indirect way, it can. So your income doesn't directly affect the interest rate, but it may affect the loan program you qualify for. And that loan program may have a different interest rate. A really common example is what can be kind of confusing are there are multiple types of conventional loans. So you have kind of a standard conventional loan, but inside of that, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who make the rules for conventional loans, have these two programs, and they're basically the same thing. They're called Home Ready and Home Possible, and they call these their affordable programs. Basically, what happens is you have to be under a certain income limit, and if you qualify for that, you can get a lower interest rate and lower mortgage insurance than you would on a standard conventional loan. So your income doesn't directly affect the rate on something like a standard conventional loan or an FHA loan or VA, but it may help you qualify for certain programs that do inherently have a lower interest rate. That is a great question, though. Trisha 11 said, are mortgage rates different in each state? Is the one you shared an average? You want to take that?
Yeah. The interest rates are normally the same everywhere. Some lenders might have some specific hits for certain areas. That used to be predominant kind of via region. If you're in the Midwest region, here's your rates and so forth. I don't really think that's there anymore. There might be some with some lenders, but normally, no, it doesn't really matter what state you're in. Some states are a little more difficult to get mortgages in, like Texas, for example. New York's really difficult. We do all these states and we know how to do them. But many times, you know, there, if you, especially in you're in New York, you have a really tough time getting a mortgage. And I've been doing this, actually last week was my 34 years doing mortgages. And this year, or within the last 6 months, is the first time I started doing New York, believe it or not. And it's awesome. But yeah, there's a lot of loans in New York, and I feel bad for people up there because they just don't have a lot of options. But now we are one of those options.
Anish said, would love to see the sheets with all the info if you can. Sure. Yeah, we can work on putting that together. I think what's cool, I think for selfishly saying this, Dan, you and I, like, we want to show what's kind of happening behind the scenes. I think that's always been something that I like doing, because sometimes it just feels like mortgages can be this, like, what's the Wizard of Oz person behind, like, the curtain, where it's like, who's running the whole thing? Oh, it's Oz.
Oz. Yeah.
Am I
Come
dumb?
On, buddy. Is that rewind really? This. We can. Oh, I guess we'll edit Wizard. That out.
Wait. No. Hold on. He's got a name, right? Isn't it's not Oz? Just the Wizard of Oz. Like,
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Am I dumb?
Okay, we need a vote out there. What's the guy's name behind the curtain in Wizard of
Oz? Name?
I think it's Oz. Now, I could be completely wrong. Come on, people, help us here. Help us here.
Oz the Great and Terrible. All right, so
you got to shave your mustache.
I'm dumb. Okay, well, it's what was I saying? Yeah, it can feel like that.
So here's the frustrating part: is I have about 10, at least 10 consultations a day with people, and the frustrating part is how confused so many people are when they call me, and some of them are already pre-approved, and they're like, I keep asking my loan officer this and that, and I don't get an answer. I had another person today that said, I mean, basically at the end of this, they're like, we had to close on our loan, but we end up finding the broker charged us $20,000 as a fee. I mean, it was a big loan, but they charged them $20,000. They kind of hit it on, I couldn't even find it when it comes to some of the paperwork. And I'm like, oh my God, you really did. Wow. They really did pay 20. It was,
was it as points?
It was a broker fee.
Oh my God. I don't even know how that passed. So,
and they're like, the broker would never take my calls. And when I asked them things, they were really vague. If that happens, call us, please. So I'd like to find out if you guys are, please put in all your questions. Let us know where you guys are coming in from. You know, are you coming in from Texas, Arizona, Oregon, Wisconsin? I say Oregon wrong, or Oregon. I say it weird.
So you're gonna trigger Drew, and he's gonna come out of the shadows. Today? I haven't seen Drew yet.
Yeah,
Rachel said, can you discuss getting a mortgage after just accepting a new job? For most people, this isn't really much of an issue. As long as you're working in a similar line of work, then starting your new job, and it kind of depends on the underwriter. But usually 1 to 2 pay stubs. 2 pay stubs is going to be a lot stronger. So about 2 weeks to 4 weeks worth of income shown on your new job, just to make sure it lines up with what you were making. The only stipulation in here is if your job has a certain probationary period that has different outlines for, what's the word I'm looking for here? Conditions?
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on, you know, if you make commissions, bonuses, tips. Those can be really difficult on a job change. But if you're just going from, you know, you work in IT, you worked at a place for a year, and now you're a year or two, and now you're going to another place, basically the same thing, but pay raise, don't worry about it. What you got to be worried about is when you start having multiple months of not working. So then on the lender side, they're thinking, is there a problem here? You know, because can most people can't afford, you know, to continually go without a job, without really getting hurt financially and with their creditors. So that's the thought behind a lot of it.
Dan, you brought him out. You brought him out of the shadows. Drew, what's up? Coming from Oregon. NYC, Metro Detroit. Let's see. So cool. Dallas. Oregon. see, I feel like I feel like we're being gaslit on how it's Oregon, right?
Oregon.
The way, Drew, the way you put it out doesn't help because it could, you could be, are you saying Oregon or, I don't know.
OR. If you're from the state of OR, Connecticut, we love you.
Florida, Oregon, Oregon.
So cool. I mean, there's people from coast to coast.
Let me find back here. Hawaii. Ooh, that's fun. I'm sure Hawaii is a tough market to be in right now. Minneapolis, Connecticut. Look at that. You know what's interesting is it's normally a lot of the New England states, I feel like, we don't hear a lot from.
I had a couple consultations today and yesterday from that section up there, probably 3 or 4 people.
Oh, sweet. I want to take a nice little fall trip to Rhode Island and Maine and the whole deal. Alexander from Denver, Mount Washington, Kentucky, Minneapolis, California, Ocala. Is it Ocala? Ocala, Florida. Reign of Terror said, why would you even think about buying a house in this market? Well, primarily because housing for a lot of people isn't about money, frankly. It's not about investing or making a return. I just bought a couple months ago because I didn't want to rent anymore. And if the market, if I lose value in my home, that's okay. I'm going to be here for a while. And statistically, what we've seen in the market is that even after the 2008 crash, which is completely different credit market than we're in right now, is it took you six, if you bought at the height, it takes you 6 years to get back to break even. So a lot of people buy because they can't maintain their current living position, position, maybe because there was mold or the roof is falling in. Some people are having a divorce. Some people are growing their family and they need an extra room. They need extra space. They need a place for their dog to be able to run around. Plenty of reasons why people buy a house other than trying to make a buck. Skull Splitter, fun, aggressive name. my brother is in the army. He's in Germany at the moment. Won't be back until next year. Can he buy a house in California? Can he come over the weekend to do the paperwork?
Yes. I don't. Do you know that the is there a clause in there of when they have to move in? I don't think there is because I did somebody who was employed or I'm not employed. What's it? Deployed. I did several of those a couple years back. But do you know? I don't really know if there's a time frame when they have to be back. I don't think there is.
So when you are in the military, occupancy changes. The rules change because normally it's 60 days that you need to move in. Here's the Fannie Mae guideline where it says military service members currently on active duty and temporarily absent from the president residence is considered to be an owner occupant. The lender must verify the temporary absence. So other than that, there isn't a requirement of when you have to be in. That's it just right. Has to be verified and you're good.
Got it. That's what I thought. Cool, cool, cool. And tell your brother, thank you.
Sorry, I lost my spot. Janet, do you feel the real estate transactions might reduce 40% in the next 5 months?
If you ask me, no. If you could sit in my chair for a day, you'd see the demand for housing is huge. I think yesterday we had 33 consultations. So, here's the horror stories about a lot of this. Just so you guys know, there is a housing shortage. Believe it or not, some people say there isn't, and there is. I don't really want to get in. Our goal here is to help you if and when you decide you think it's a good time to buy for you. That's what we're here for. We try not to predict what house prices are going to do with mortgage rates. I just give you my opinion. Like on my channel, I say, here's what's happening this week in the economy. Here's what's probably going to happen with interest rates. You know, when you watch some of these channels that says, housing's going to crash 50% or whatever. And then on the other side of the channel, they're telling me we're crazy. None of us know. So I just wanted to kind of start a clean slate in 2023. Our goal here now is to help educate you guys. Once you decide you want to buy a house, please reach out to us. We'd love to help you educate you on the what, the why, the where, the programs and all that. And that's why you're here, just get that education.
Here's my tinfoil hat moment is what I am seeing a lot. What I'm seeing a few people do is they do the don't buy now thing. But then they go and they sell services on here's where to buy. I'm like, wait, your message was don't buy.
Yeah.
And you realize it's not connecting. I watched a video of someone who said, don't buy a house now. And then they were talking about them buying a house. And I think it's really, I don't know what the word is, but like, it's really strange to talk about, to assume that like other people couldn't be like me. So for instance, is this an ideal market to buy in? Not necessarily compared to like what's happened historically, and like the great interest rates and lower purchase prices. But like, I still bought a house because it made sense for my financial situation and made sense for like my life situation. And like, it would be really strange of me to assume that other people aren't going through what I'm going through. Like, and to assume that like there's this general void of a person who just, if the math doesn't make sense, then they're not going to do it. Yeah. I don't know. It's just very strange to see that. Plus, like, are you on Instagram much, Dan?
Never.
You have an Instagram?
I think I do. I don't know if I really ever. I think I screwed around on with it once or twice. But yeah,
that's the
tough thing is when you start getting into predictions and all this other stuff. We don't know. And I finally decided, you know, I'm not going to predict anymore. We're just here to provide you guys with the tools and the education of, you know, if you want to know about a program, love to help. You know, if you sat in our shoes for a day, you'd see so many people that are in situations where their landlord just doubled their rent. And all the rents in the area, or they've been in the house for 5 years and now all of a sudden the landlord sells and now they go out to the rental market and the rents are double. And they're like, well, heck, I can get a That's house what, and have the same payment. So you have to watch where it's like, you know, not everybody's in the housing market just to, you know, buy it and sell it in a year and make 50%. Cause that's not the norm. And it's not the, you know, throughout history, we see about a 3 or 4% increase in values. So you know, most of the time you're not going to get stupid rich on a house. Past few years you have been, but that's not the norm. So
that's what Rachel just said. I want to buy because my rent increased $400. And that's been very common that we've been seeing as well as
a lot of people who are saying,
yeah, and it's several hundred dollars at a time. Henry, you said, can DACA recipients apply for a first-time homebuyer program? Yes, on conventional loans and FHA loans. FHA just recently did that in the past year. Past year or two. Are you familiar with VA and USDA guidelines on DACA?
Yeah, they'll. I don't know. I got one approved today. It was FHA, but yeah, you can do FHA and conventional. I do not know on VA, USDA. I think government loans you can. I'm pretty sure that
follow HUD's guidance, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Reach out.
They'll usually follow FHA.
Jaime, good to see you here. Jaime's in the chat. Deluxe Dutch. My wife and I are going to be using a USDA loan. My wife's income puts us over the income limit. But after the move-in, she's going to be a stay-at-home mom. When is the latest she can quit her job? That's a tough one. It's going to have to be... They're not going to be able to go off of a future... You know, in the future, she'll quit and then be a stay-at-home mom and then it will work. You're going to have to... Since she already has income, it's going to have to be documented that she's not working anymore for that income to not be counted on the loan.
With the USDA loan, they count the household income. So it is part of that equation. So if you exceed the income limitations, you're not going to be qualified to do a USDA loan, just to let you know. So she's going to have to go through and do the closing. She'd probably have to quit now and document that. So that's not a part of the income and would deem you eligible for USDA.
Yeah.
So don't go down the path thinking you're going to get it, close it on a USDA loan, get in the house, and then she can quit because the household income's used. I would check with your mortgage person now to that they know all this stuff because you're going down a road and you're going to hit a brick wall.
Interesting. Drew, you said you tell them that you're quitting in the next 3 years. I'm not 100% certain that would. Are you sure? I don't think that's going to fly.
You're a smart ass.
Lisa said, well, what's hard is every once in a while, Drew comes in with like great guidelines and the other half, he comes in with like not great guidelines as a joke. And I'm like, which side are we on at the moment? Lee, I appreciate your super chat. I'm going to get to that here in just 1 second. What is your experience with the FHA 203K and have you heard of America's Community Home Mortgage Ownership Commitment Grant? That's a mouthful. from Bank of America. I do have a video on the Bank of America one. It's only through Bank of America, so I don't have any experience with it because we can't do it. So I'm not entirely sure about that one. And then Dan, do you want to talk about 203K?
Yeah, 203Ks, I have a lot of experience with them. There's two variations of it. There's what's called, I call it a streamline. I think that's called, I don't know if they call it a regular or what, but there's a, I call it the limited. I think the technical word is limited. So there's a 203K limited. With the limited, that's an easy loan actually to get through. But it'll only give you up to $30,000 to do the work. So the work has to be just basically cosmetic. You can paint, you can put in, you know, cabinets, new appliances, things like that. You'll need to get you need to get invoices or receipts or something to show, you know, how much these items are going to cost you. Okay, so that's one. Now, if you're going to do major renovations, you need a full 203K loan. Full 203K loans are they're doable. I always have stayed away from them for the past 5, 6, 7 years because they were brutal. Because you have to hire an FHA kind of counselor. You have to then have to help you get quotes from a bunch of contractors that they approve because they're going to need the licensing and all this stuff. So basically, you have to hire an FHA person to kind of be your subcontractor in the whole thing, and it can be really, really daunting, I guess is the best way. And then the Bank of America thing, please check out as much as you can about that, because everything that I've read on it, videos I've seen, and the guidelines that I read through make no sense. And a friend of mine who actually dug into it as well, he's like, it's a complete farce. So I don't want to say that for verbatim, but check it out for yourself. But from everything I'm finding out, it's not a good program. And I don't even know. I think they did it for PR reasons.
Which program? Oh, the Bank of America.
Wasn't that the program, this specific one that they came out with and said you had to be in low income, you had to be in these cities, you had to be in this. What was that one that they had on that? Was that that one?
There's multiple types of them.
Okay.
But I'm not, off the top of my head, I'm not 100% certain. Going back to the USDA question real quick, I did look through the guidelines. If anybody wants to understand how, like, every once in a while when Dan and I are like, well, we're not entirely certain. This is 67 pages on one type of loan about income requirements, just income. So, like, to answer the question about USDA, Drew, let me know if I'm reading this incorrectly. It shows, oh, I just had it. Where did it go? Verified changes of income must be documented, including, but not limited to, pending retirement, resignation tendered, document raise that will occur prior to loan closing. So in that situation, I'm pretty sure it's going to have to be show like a resignation tendered prior to loan closing based on the guidelines. But if I'm reading that wrong, please let me know. Sweet. Where are we at in the questions here? Every once in a while, I get a little lost. We have a super chat from Lee.
Hey, Lee.
How difficult is it to get a loan for adding an extension on a home or adding building barn on the property? What's the process on it? Dan, do you want to cover that? Because you just talked about
So there's two variations that you can do. Extended to, okay, so you're going to need a 203K full, or there's also a home renovation loan on conventional financing. They're both kind of similar. What you're going to have to do is you can't do the work yourself, just so you know. You'd have to get contractor bids. Contractor bids have to get sent in and approved and all that. We can walk you through this process. It probably would be best if you can go with the home renovation, the conventional one, because the FHA one requires that you get an FHA subcontractor, and then they go out and get FHA contractors, and it's really difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible, because there's millions of the loans done each year, but the conventional one is a little more easier, and it also is cheaper based on what your credit scores are and the loan amount you're looking for. So there are conventional and FHA programs for you. You know, please click that, and we can do a consultation and walk you through both those programs or all three of the programs and which one might be best for you.
Did you hear me hit my knee? Wow.
No, but
okay.
I saw you almost falling off the chair.
Anthony, can you talk about reserves required for conventional or DSCR? I'm assuming you're talking about investment conventional, if that's the case. For investment conventional loans, it's really going to depend on the AUS, the automated underwriting software, on what's going to be required here. I would anticipate 3 to 6 months. For DSCR, again, this is going to be different. They don't have DSCR loans don't have an automated underwriting software. They're going to go off of a whole guideline sheet. And this is going to depend on the down payment. But again, I would expect three. Sometimes with DSCR programs, you can expect up to 12 months. It depends on like how much you're putting down and what your credit score is as well. So unfortunately, it's kind of...
The tough thing is with the DSCRs too, because it's investor specific. So when you're getting an FHA loan or a conventional loan, we all use Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You know, and if you don't know those, don't worry about it. It's all centralized in those areas. When you start talking about DSCRs, those are what they're called non-QM loans. So those are basically a company opened up, they have their own money, and they're willing to lend you their own money on this. So they could technically come up with their own guidelines. However, they all are very similar. I have a couple going on right now. One bank required 3 months of reserves. The other bank required 6 months of reserves. So obviously I'm going to go with the 3 months reserves if that's all we have. But that's where we help you go through, because we have probably 50 different non-QM lenders, and we have all their programs available to us.
Luxury Card Store said, didn't you make a video about Bank of America? Are you now saying it's not a good product? Yeah, I made two videos on the guidelines for the program. I don't have any feelings on if it's good or bad. And I mentioned that in the video because, you know, we can't do it's Bank of America. We're not Bank of America. So we can't do the loan. So I don't know the experience of working with them. So it could be good. From what I've heard, some people who have said it worked great for them, and other people said it was the worst thing that they went through. So that really puts us into a very neutral average territory.
Yeah.
I don't have personal opinions on it, but I'm trying to think of the best way to find like the experience of it. Would really be somebody who's gone through the program would be the best way to get that.
If you hear some noise in the background on me, it's either hailing or freezing rain. I'm in my sunroom. And really? I got all sun things up here, and it's tinking up there. Oh. I was like, what the hell is going on?
I don't hear anything.
Okay.
Cool. Let's see. William Ford. Also, I had to make the chat subscriber only just so we can like catch up on some of these.
Okay. Cool.
Oh, wait. I just had it. Looking to buy, William said, I'm looking to buy a house in Arizona with a USDA loan. The listing states 3% buyer agency compensation. What is that, and where would that be added to my costs? So it's very typical from everywhere I know that the seller is going to be the one who pays for the realtor. So what's average in the US is for the seller to pay 3% to the buyer's agent and 3% to the seller's agent. So you will not be paying that, but it will effectively be part of the purchase price. What ways can I get approved for a conventional loan if there is roof or structural damage? It was briefly mentioned in one of your videos. Dan, do you want to really quickly cover the conventional renovation?
Yeah, if you have structural damage on with a conventional loan, you got problems. So you're probably going to have to get a home renovation loan or a 203K loan. If you got pre-approved for a conventional loan, I would go the conventional route for the home renovations, because the problem is it's a roof with structural damage. That's the key wording in there, because many times conventional appraisals aren't that tough. You know, you can have a broken window or peeling paint or, you know, things wrong with the house. It'll never pass FHA inspection, but many times it'll clear right through on a conventional loan. When you start having roof and structural damage, even the lender kind of backs off. They're like, you know, because you got to look at it. You might be buying a house and you're putting down 3% or 5%. The lender's putting the lion's share of the money up front. I'm not the lender, but we don't want a house with structural damage in the roof, because if you end up not paying, you know, out of the gate and you walk away from the house, we're stuck with a house that has roof damage with a big lien on it. And now we got to get it fixed. And now we got to try to sell it and recoup all our money. And it's just a loss leader for the lender. So that's why you're going to have a trouble with the roof and structural damage.
Yep. Shwayne Folks, it looked like anything over 720 has the best savings, or did I see that wrong? 740 credit is going to be the highest. It's going to top out the charts. Why is there not a picture there? Oh,
hey, do we got anybody from West Virginia out there? Just checking.
Are you from West Virginia? I'm from
West Virginia. I told you I grew up just north of Wheeling.
My family's from West Virginia.
Yeah.
Cabin Creek.
I grew up right across the river from Steubenville, Ohio.
Oh.
Your dad, I was talking to your dad one day and he's like, "Oh yeah, we were there for something." And I'm like, "Well, right across the bridge, there was a sign that says Highland Hills, whatever. I lived right up on that mountain."
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Good old West Virginia. Let's do. Tell me why it's okay. First time I'm able to watch you guys live. Well, thank you for being here. And feel free to ask some questions.
It's okay.
It's okay. Oh,
well, their name was Wise. Their username was. Yeah. It's okay. We'd love to have you.
Lee said, "Right on the border, West Virginia here."
Oh, sweet. We got to be in. I'm wearing my alumni shirt today. I went to WVU.
I always. Oh my gosh.
You thought so, I went to Harvard, didn't you?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Most people do.
It was that or Stanford. I went to college in Virginia, and anytime it's like an 8-hour drive, and anytime I would always go through West Virginia, and West Virginia is gorgeous, like driving through through the mountains and stuff, and I'd always find like a cigar lounge in West Virginia and take a break while driving. It's a good time. Met some very interesting people.
Yeah. We're all interesting from West Virginia. Interesting. I think it was in the water.
Yeah. Dune, is this community home ownership grant is really legitimate? Well, that sounds, it depends on which one you're talking about. Cause like community home ownership grant is the name of like probably 1,000 different grants. It's saying first time home buyers don't pay for down payments and no closing costs. Usually when something too good to be true, it usually is. What we've found with a lot of down payment assistance programs is they often have, and I don't want to say like strings attached in this like really bad way, because down payment assistance can be helpful for certain people. But what usually ends up happening is in that instance where there is kind of a little bit like, what's the catch? What's the downside here? Often the rate is higher. And then also there's usually some sort of restriction with it. Often these are like resale restrictions where maybe you have to pay back all or a portion of the money that you got when you go to sell. Maybe you get like a second loan. There's all these different types of things that can come with it. Usually what we've found to be true is that non-down payment assistance loans tend to be better mathematically than down payment assistance or loans with down payment assistance. So what I would do in your situation is ask whoever you're getting this grant from, is can I see all of the documents with this grant? And they should have given that to you in disclosures anyway, but read through it line by line. I know it's going to be boring, but it's going to help you understand like what is the actual implication of getting a grant like that. That way you don't find it out later when you want to sell that it's going to eat into your money, the check that you would get at closing when you sell, because there was a grant on it that needs to be repaid. What about collections?
Can I address this one?
Yes, you can.
I'll try to be as fast as I can, but this is where a lot of people topic. I found out in the last 2-3 weeks. The last 2-3 weeks, I've had people I had to talk them off the ledge because of what some of the things they've done. So let's talk about collections real quick. If you have a collection, the thing I want you to understand behind it is we need to know pieces of that. Okay. So I want you to look at your credit report if you have the ability to get one, because what you're going to look at, there's going to be two items. One is it's going to show you that it's in collection for sure. And then the next area that I want you to focus in on is the last active date. Okay. So that's where you really want to pay attention to. So let's say that the last active date was 2018 and it's a collection account. All right, here's what's going to happen. The algorithms in the credit report is going to read this. It's going to read the coding that account is in collection. It doesn't care about the amount of the collection. It could be a dollar. It could be $10,000. It doesn't matter. It focuses on the coding of the collection and the last active date. Okay, so in this example, the last active date is a January of 2018. All right. So basically, at this point, it's really not affecting you that much because it's 5 years old. All right. But what happens is if you go in then and pay off that collection, all that's going to happen is it's going to change. The coding's still going to read a 9 is a collection. The balance, like I said before, the balance doesn't matter. And now it's probably going to say 0. But what the other piece of the equation it's going to read is now the last active date is going to repopulate to when you paid off that collection. So it's going to say now January of 2023. Your credit score is going to plummet. So if you have to pay off the collections, what we normally do to protect you from any credit scores dropping is we'll pay them off at the closing. So we might say, well, you have to pay off these 3 collections. We'll include it in the closing. You're going to have to bring that much extra money. You would have to pay it off anyways, and we'll take care of it at closing. Okay. So that's the way to basically do it. If they're medical, don't even mess with them. Nobody cares about medical bills. Charge-offs,
except the medical collection companies.
Yeah, everybody has them. So hopefully that clarifies it up, because so many people come out there and say, you know, we can't help you because you have these collections. Pay them off and then come back to me and let's revisit this. I had one lady, her credit scores dropped over 80 points. She was livid. Gosh. We didn't do it. And I said, well, what you just did, I can't change. I can't, you know, you shouldn't have done that. And so I can only teach you and educate you prior to doing it. Once you do it, you know, it's done. But that's a fantastic question.
Yeah. I need to probably do like a whole video on collections and the ins and outs there.
Yeah.
Antoine Reed, I was told by a lender that when trying to do FHA house hacking, which for those of you who don't know, FHA house hacking is just kind of a term used for when you live in one unit and you rent out the other units up to 4 units on an FHA loan. Only rental income counts to help my debt to income ratio and none of the operating expenses count against it. So it sounds like basically what happens on an FHA loan is the other rental income will count to lower your mortgage payment. So let's say that the mortgage payment on, let's say, a 4 unit was $3,000 per month. And that would include like taxes, insurance, any association fees if there are there. And let's say like your future rent that you could get from it is, let's say it's, I don't know, $3,000. So you take $3,000 times 0.75. So you could then use $2,250 as to count against the mortgage payment. So then what we would do is take $3,000 minus 2,275. And basically, instead of having a mortgage payment in your debt to income ratio of $3,000 per month, you effectively have a mortgage payment of $725 per month. To do what you're talking about, where you can write off operating expenses, that more is a tax thing. But if you want to do that, it's not going to positively help you. It actually would negatively affect you doing this. But if you are counting operating expenses in a mortgage in any instance, is if you would have 2-year history of being a landlord and you have those listed on your Schedule E. And keep in mind, like, this will lower your affordability, not increase your affordability by counting those on your taxes.
Good one.
You followed up with saying, does this mean that technically I can get can be negative cash flow on this rental while having an improved DTI? Negative cash flow on the rental.
Yeah, negative cash flow.
Yeah, the lenders don't care about cash flow. They're going to look at, they're going to use an appraisal form, N07, and they're going to look at comparative rents in the area to determine what the projected rental income is going to be. Then they're going to use 75% of that to offset your mortgage payment. They don't actually care about like on paper cash flow.
I think what he meant was he could technically be collecting more rents than his mortgage payment is. So he'd have a negative. I think that's what he meant.
Oh, if the question is like, can you use that income to, like Drew said it concisely, like it's capped at the mortgage payment. You can't get income from that unless it's on a Schedule E is probably the better. We worked our way through it. Tell me why it's okay. Said, I already called last week. Dan spoke and dealing with Patrick, who's Dan's son. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me. And you were very kind. Awesome.
Thanks. I'm not as mean as I am on these videos.
No, you're not.
Thanks for calling in. We probably, like I said, I think we had a record day. It was like 35. And for January, that's nuts. So yeah. we're in the process of hiring. So if you go to Kyle's calendar and you can't get it booked in for a couple of days, or my calendar, I have a couple of people starting next week.
Yeah. Yeah. And thanks to all of you who watch and who, you know, trust us to help you through the next process. You can do the home loan consult here. And we're licensed in all 50 states to do mortgages. You know, when a lot of companies are like laying off people, like Dan just hired on another loan officer, and we're like in growth phase, which is completely opposite.
Yeah. I'm working weekends, evenings, and I don't want to. As you can see, I'm old.
Sarah said, if you start a new career partway through the year, does that lower your income for purchasing a house? My W-2 is lower for last year, and even though I'm making the same money, will they just average taxes?
You, me.
Oh, you take it. Sorry.
That's going to be, well, it depends. If you start a new career path, that the year lower by income, we're going to go off your current pay. So if you've been on the same job for a couple years, we'll take an average, but we do account in there for raises and everything else. But if it's a whole new career, that's where it gets really tough, because unless you have a steady paycheck, you know, it's every week is 40 hours or 36 hours or whatever, you know, week after week after week. If there's any variance there, like 1 week's 28, the next week's 32, the next week's, you know, 40, the next week's 28, it's tough. And especially because you're in a new field, we don't know how many hours you're going to make and how much money you're going to make, nor do you. So it's really tough for us to get, you know, approve a loan in that situation. And I wouldn't really, I wouldn't advise any of my borrowers or even my kids or whatever. If, you know, if your income is all like this, because if it's a brand new job, be careful, you know, live off of what Kyle's rules are when you're buying your first house, you know, make sure you can afford it, this and that. But you might have reserves in the bank and such. So that's why there's a lot of these questions I'd love to answer precisely, but they're a little deep. And that's why a lot of times we do these consultations, and we're not here to sell you on the consultation or whatever, but some of these are a little in depth that we, you know, it might take us a half hour to explain this to you. And we have 100 other people sitting there waiting to try to get another question in. So yeah, please, if you have an in-depth question, please do this. And we're there for you. We do, like I said, yesterday, I think we had 33 consultations, and tomorrow probably as much or more.
Yeah. Cruz said, I want to pay for the one-on-one consulting. Well, it's free. We don't charge. No. It actually
is right here, and we'll be there. Yeah.
It's actually not. Is that true? I don't think it's legal for us to charge anyway. It's free.
We're here to help. And if you decide to use us for a mortgage, that's how we make money.
All right. Ivorine, if I were to take money from my first property for a down payment on an investment property and income did not change much since first house was bought, is there a chance a lender would approve the loan? Yes, you absolutely can use a secured loan. Maybe it's a HELOC on the first property to use as a down payment on your investment property. Happens all the time. That's perfectly fine. Miss Crazy, thanks for the super chat. You said, good evening, guys. I'm going to try to buy a home this year, but my tax bill once I file 2022 is going to be pretty high. Will it affect my chances if I make a payment plan with the IRS? So I'm not... Do you remember what the conventional guidelines are for payment plans?
No, I don't know how many payments you have to make, but you have to set up the payment plan.
I have a resource.
Yeah. Normally you have to make a couple payments just because it's like child support. Just because you in the divorce decree, it says you have child support. We have to validate it because we don't know you're actually receiving the child support. So in most cases, what will happen is, you know, you have to show the payment plans, and then you're probably going to have to show a couple months of those payments.
This may be hard to see. Federal tax debt, lien not filed, which is probably where you're going to be in. So this is going to be different depending on which loan type you're looking at. And that's what Dan was mentioning too, when we do the consults, is like, it's hard to answer because there's multiple loan types and they all have different answers to them.
Yeah.
So let's see. Document payment agreed and at least 1 month timely payment. This is on a conventional loan. Let's see. Freddie is probably going to match even though they're silent on the guidelines. FHA is going to require three payments.
Okay.
Why in the world can I not scroll over? VA does not have any guidance, so it's going to depend on the underwriter. I bet they're probably going to default to.
Yep. Conventional. Or they might go to government loans.
They're probably going to default to three.
When you're looking at FHA, VA, and USDA, all those are government-backed or government-sponsored loans. Many times they somewhat have, you know, if it's a gray area, they'll fall back on one of the other programs. So I would assume on each one of those is three. On conventional financing, it's one. That's pretty good, one. So there's the answer. So you just need to figure out, you know, if you're going to go with a conventional loan or an FHA loan. Probably if you're having major tax problems because of your income, you're probably going to go with a conventional loan.
I will say too, also that the payment will have to be included in your debt to income ratio. Did you talk about that?
No, I didn't. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's okay.
Yep.
So that will affect your affordability. So just a heads up there. It's possible it won't have any impact on you, but it does get counted in there. Let's see. DeLaw 2 said, I signed up for a consult. I have found a few homes, but USDA says no, usually because it isn't the mill rate or the region or footage. If it isn't the mill rate. So USDA eligibility, like property eligibility, is actually based off of population size.
There's a map. Here it comes.
Oh, you want me to pull that up? Okay, USDA eligibility.
It's really cool. I don't know what the name was on there, but if you Google USDA property eligibility, it actually pulls up a really cool map. You just plug in the address and it says yes or no.
You click accept.
There it is.
And then you come in here. So like, let's go to Dan's neck of the woods. So obviously all Chicago is not going to qualify because there's way too many people here.
Go out to Sycamore. I just did one out there.
Boy, it's way west. Sycamore is at?
It's a way western suburb. So go up a little bit. Go from Chicago and just work your way west. Go west, young man.
More west?
You're going to have to probably zoom in some more. There's bazillions of small towns out here.
Do you see
Schaumburg? Sycamore. Is that Schaumburg right there?
Oh my gosh. Where should I zoom in here?
Just click by Chicago again, or in that area, and then go to go west, and you can see DeKalb, just a hair to the right. Up, right there. Go right in that area. Yep.
Sweet. Oh, there we go.
Right there. Sycamore and DeKalb.
In these instances, orange, the map's kind of confusing. Orange does not qualify. You would think it'd be the opposite.
It's orange, weird how it's little pockets in many areas, little pockets.
And so for a lot of people where it's like, okay, this is obviously the city limit here. But like if you can find a house, and it doesn't work, you know, in all places, but if you can find a house in here, it's going to qualify USDA versus just, you know, right over here. And this is probably, you know, this is probably what, like a 5-minute drive? 10-minute drive?
Yeah. And I live just east of there, 20 minutes. And then Chicago's not far from there.
Yeah.
So, it's weird. Like San Francisco or San Diego, right outside of San Diego is all USDA.
Yeah. Now, can you find a house there that you like? That's a different question.
But that's how you do it. You just Google USDA property eligibility. It'll pull up that map. You can actually type in the address, and it'll say specifically that address, yes or no.
How many homeowners in the U.S. buy their house in cash and never use a mortgage? Last I saw, it hovered around low 20%. So 20, I think it was like 23, 24-ish. That might have changed recently, but that was the last one I saw.
And that's, didn't you do a video recently about that? I thought cash buyers right now was the highest ever in 2022 at like 33%.
Oh, you're right. No, we did that on the live stream. I didn't think it crossed to 30, though. I thought it was still
It's way up there. Because, a lot of people bought, you know, my nephew's building a house on money he made on Bitcoin.
Wow.
Yeah, he made a ton of money in Bitcoin, said, I'm going to sell it and just build a house, and he's 30 years old. God bless him. And he'll be having no mortgage his whole life.
Let's see. In September, it was almost a third. So, where is it at? Yeah, somewhere around there. I don't know. I need to dig back into that. Man, when did he get into when did he buy into Bitcoin?
Back year, like my son, my oldest son, he, same thing. He made, they start buying Bitcoin at like $1,000, went to 60,000. I think they got when it was hundreds of dollars. And jeez. These are young kids that just, you know, they were taking their paychecks and putting half of it in Bitcoin, and it freaking paid off. Man, wow. Did it.
That's awesome.
And they sold out quite a bit at a good time too.
I feel like though, when I start investing in things, things go down. So
yeah, I'm the same way. I'll post when I'm investing. Everybody stay away from that.
Daniel said, greatly appreciate your solid navigation to a wild scene. Shout out from Nevada. Thanks for being here, David.
Thanks, Daniel.
Let us see. Reign of terror with interest rates as high as it is, you lose easy on the longevity alone. And if you can't afford your current living situation, why would you risk such a big purchase? I think we're going
into... Reign of terror was the last one, too, that said, why would somebody ever possibly buy in this market? What you have to understand is people aren't in your situation. I mean, there's things that come up where people just, they're like, I want to buy a house. And not only, you know, they're not all first-time home buyers. These are people moving up, people moving down. Like Kyle said, people getting divorced, just they have kids, a dog, this, that they don't want to rent. So, you know, you can't, you know, sit there and bash those people because it's their situation. You know, I'll put this out there, and it's kind of off the scene a little bit, but, you know, having kids, when, you know, should you have kids? I don't know. You shouldn't even ask me that question. You know, if you want to have kids, God bless you, have kids. But the same thing, if somebody wants to buy a house, let them buy a house. It's their money. If you were making the mortgage payments for them, that's one thing, but
yeah,
everybody has their own opinions.
Dylan, you asked, when taking out an FHA loan, if you bid under value and they accept, can you take out the loan for a max amount and use the rest for improvements, or do you have to take out the construction loan? Nope, it's going to go to the lower of the purchase price versus what they listed it for. Otherwise, to get money for improvements, you're going to have to get a construction loan. Who pays for the mortgage broker fee, buyer, or lender? So I think it's a big misconception. Most mortgage brokers don't have like a fee that you pay. And if you do see a fee listed out, it usually there's a credit offered with it to offset it. Mortgage brokers used to work where it was like kind of a finder's fee, and it doesn't really work like that anymore. The way mortgage brokers work is it's more like instead of it being the lender and them paying the loan officer, and then they have to pay for their marketing and their employment and all the other things that come along with it, they separate. And so, for instance, us, you know, we function as a broker, but we don't have to pay, you know, we don't have a company that does the whole, like, pays millions of dollars for Super Bowl ads and, you know, pays for tons of advertising and things like that that get passed on to you. We don't have any of that, so we can pass on the lower costs. So there isn't like a fee that you pay for that. Miss Crazy said, don't wait any longer. Last year videos scared me from buying, but this year I am going for it regardless of whatever. I would have bought in 2020 and videos scared me and I regret it. The amount of people who have said this is high, like where they mentioned like I was gonna buy in 2020 and then I was convinced to not do it and now I'm really regretting it. You know, that's not indicative of what's going to happen in the future, but that's just a common sentiment I've seen a lot, especially as we've seen a lot of like the big housing crash things. And the only thing that's really interesting to me about like housing crash stuff is like define a housing crash. No one's defining a housing crash, nor the financial implications of it. So like what is a housing crash? Like median listings drop 10%. Like housing median home price drops 40%. What's that? What is a housing crash? Like everyone's taking on the emotional weight of it, and everyone wants to act like they're like super smart by looking at data, but they're not actually explaining what they mean by the outcome of the data by explicitly saying this is what a crash looks like, nor are they actually detailing like the financial implications of that. So let's say median home prices drop 40%. What does that actually mean for somebody who owns a home and can continue making the payments? Because if you're looking at history to actually understand what's happening with data, you're seeing anytime home prices have dropped, they've rebounded in less than 6 years. And that's happened over three or four different periods of home price depreciation. It feels a little disingenuous to me because there's this like emotional baggage that comes with it. And you're assuming that everything's going to fall at the bottom when that's not really the case. That's my rant. And I'll move on. Drew said, have you heard Canada won't let foreigners buy property for the next 2 years to counter the housing price increase? No. I am not familiar with Canadian housing, but that's a really interesting thing. I haven't heard about that. Hundreds of thousands. Then they name one. I feel like they shouldn't say there that many. What? Which mortgage type do you find is best? Dan, what do you...
Whatever one you get approved for. So here, really, it basically comes down to it. It's if you can't get approved for a conventional loan, then it's not the best loan for you. I hate that as my answer, but it is. Like I presented somebody with a product today that I was able to get them approved for. I tried with a conventional financing, couldn't get approved. Went through FHA financing, couldn't get it approved. Had to go with a non-QM. So what we do is we come back to you and I explain to them, here's what happened when we tried conventional financing, doesn't work, and here's why. The next thing is that we spoke the same thing about FHA. So I said, unfortunately, this is the only product that you're eligible for. So what we do is we provide the borrower with all the information and say, here's the only product you'll get approved for. It has a higher rate than the other ones. It has a higher down payment than the other ones, but it's all that you qualify for. So we start out kind of trying to get, a 3% down first time home buyer purchase house, with a great rate. But if you don't fit in that, you kind of just got to work your way down. But ultimately, 740 credit score, 3% down, home ready product. So you don't get hit for the credit score dings and everything. And you're in a house and you don't have to worry about the payment, your payments going up in the future. Yeah. Like a lot of rents do.
Tell me why it's okay, said, I hear lenders say this all the time. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of loans out there. Then they name one, feel like they shouldn't say there are that many and don't look into others. So I don't know who's saying that there are thousands of loans out there. There are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of grants and down payment assistance programs. And the reason why that is because they're all local. And the U.S. is huge and has... How many counties are in the U.S.? Thousands of counties in the
thousands
U.S.
And, thousands,
and each county may have their own, down payment assistance grant of sorts.
Cities so even have them.
Yeah, so that's
specific,
why I like
specific cities.
But those down payment assistance isn't a type of loan necessarily in the same way that you might think of a normal loan. I always think of there are pretty much four main types of loans, where you have like conventional, FHA, VA, USDA. Down payment assistance actually is like kind of a modifier to those types of loans. So for instance, you might get an FHA loan with down payment assistance. Even though the down payment assistance might be a type of loan, like a second loan, a second lien, or a grant, it's added on to the FHA loan. So the primary thing was FHA. Or you have things like jumbo, which really kind of falls in line under the conventional category, just not the enterprise conventional, which I don't really have to get into that much. And then you have things like Bank of America's, Bank of America has their own, they call it whatever they call it. It's a conventional loan. It's a conventional loan that Bank of America offers with a little special add-on. You have, what are other ones? Home Ready. Like it's a conventional loan. It just has this little special nuance. So
there's Home Ready, Home Possible, Home One, Borrow, yeah. Borrow Smart, FHA, FHA 203B, FHA 203K. There's a lot of them. There's not hundreds, but there is a lot of products out there, especially when you get to the non-QM. They have bank statement loans, 1099 loans, DSCR loans, I-10 loans. I can keep going on. There's probably 20 different, variations of non-QM loans and probably 20 variations of the others. So it's you probably have like, 30 or 40.
Yeah, it's kind of like ice cream where it's like, okay, vanilla ice cream. I can describe that to you, but you didn't have to know which brand it was. But there might be thousands of vanilla ice cream brands, and they're all going to be slightly different. And you might like the one with vanilla bean or the one without it. Like, it's all those little things, if that analogy helps.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
or I'm hungry and haven't had dinner yet.
Yeah.
Amoksa. I don't know how to say that. Love your channel. Well, thank you. Yeah, there is no timer today because I can't hold up with a timer. You think I can answer a question under 30 seconds?
Same. And a lot of these are just, they're tough to answer in general. That's why we do this. I love this because it keeps us on our toes as well.
Yeah, I feel like I learned so much on these live streams where I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that little thing that was stored here. We go and look up something. You guys are so sweet. Just like the ice cream analogy. Thanks for answering. Yeah, and thank you for asking your questions.
Thanks for joining us.
I am about at my wall, and I'm sure Dan is too. One question here. I'm a DACA recipient. Where do you recommend I start looking to get an FHA loan? Come with us. We'd love to help. So we're licensed in all 50 states, and we have a team of loan officers. You can just book a consult here, winthehouseyoulove.com. And Dan takes about half the calls right now. And we'd love to help. So again, it's free, no obligation. We'll walk through your scenario. And then the next step after that is taking a look at an application just so we can get all the numbers down. And then we can show you different quotes and what loans you would get approved for. That way you can make a confident decision moving forward. Aviator, you said, I took a 6-month career break, saved money for it, maintained a 780 to 790 credit score, got a way better job, 55% increase. That's awesome. Would the break be frowned upon by lenders? It's going to depend on loan type and job, what your income is. So when you say you got a better job and it increased 55%, that leads me to think that this is a salary. If it's a salary and you're looking at a conventional loan, that's going to be your best case scenario. If you're looking at like an FHA loan, you're going to have to be back on the job for another 6 months to show job stability to FHA. Outside of that though, like you have a high credit score. I can't see why you wouldn't go conventional. As long as your pay is like a salary, that's going to be best. If you're switching, if you're going to like hourly or commission overtime, or you're considering with that big of an increase, I wouldn't be surprised if there was like stock options or RSUs in there. In that case, you wouldn't be able to use that higher amount there because it hasn't been averaged since that break. And you said same field salary increase. So in that case, yes, on a conventional loan, we'll document the salary and you'll be good to go. That makes it very easy. Sweet. Life of Yannick. Can I use two lenders for a pre-approval? Dan, you want to take that?
Yeah, but it's, yeah. I guess the answer, the technical answer is yes. But what you want to kind of work on is you got to understand our point of view as well. We spend a lot of time, you know, trying to educate you and working on your loan and getting you pre-approved and making sure we answer all your questions and everything like that. Where it kind of gets frustrating is, you know, you use all those pieces and then we educate you for 2-3 months, get you into the thing, and then you go with the other lender because they beat us by a 0.125 in the rate. So you got to understand is most of us work on basically 100% commissions. So we don't have salaries and everything else. So, you know, a lot of times it gets frustrating when we're working, you know, you got two people working, going back and forth and back and forth. I get it on the consumer side. It is much beneficial, but you should kind of, you know, vet each one of them, see which one of them has the best, you know, rate and terms for you on a specific day. And then pick that company and run with it. Because if they had the best rate on that, the day you got pre-approved, they're probably going to have the best rate once you get approved as well. So I always say, you know, just stick with one of them so you don't have two people working hard to help you. And then you have to tell one of them no. But technically, yes, you can get two pre-approvals. You can get 10 pre-approvals if you want. But yeah, that would be my take on that. So not trying to be rude. I'm just trying to be realistic.
Anita said, appreciate the consultation on Monday. Got in touch with Navient College Loan, waiting for more information. I'm looking forward to working with you. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you all for being here. There's plenty of questions we couldn't answer because we're just two people and we would be here all night answering questions. So here's what you can do. If your question was unanswered, we'd love to talk with you. You can go to winthehouseyoulove.com and book a free consult with us. All you have to do is just go. You click when you're free. That way we don't play phone tag and we're not going to harass you because nobody likes that. It's not fun. So book a time that you're free and that we're free. And then somebody on our team will reach out, Dan or a couple other loan officers, and we can walk you through some of the next steps. You can also email me. My email's in the description. Please go to Dan's channel as well. And yes, we've been going for an hour and a half. We usually do two, and I promise Dan that we're going to start keeping these shorter because he also needs a little bit of some time off at the end of it. So thank you all for being here. We do these every single Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. We'd love to have you on the next one. And then, of course, Dan and I both make videos. Go follow him or subscribe, I guess is the YouTube word. And then I'm sure I'll make a new video here soon. So thank you all. Have a wonderful night, and we'll talk to you soon.